Welcome to the Weaving Web of Consciousness podcast, a space for people with open hearts and minds who are on a journey of expanding consciousness. My name is Marta, and I will be sharing with you my conscious healing journey. Additionally, with my best friend Anna, we'll be exploring the great conscious transformation happening in the world. Join us on an adventure of learning the new ways of being and building bridges across the many concepts that truly need connection as we are building a better world for all beings. And let's learn together how to embrace our humanity with all of its ups and downs so that we can have as good life as possible. Hello everyone, welcome to Weaving Web of Consciousness podcast. This is Marta.
And this is Anna.
And we are recording an episode today about a very interesting topic, which we have explored together in our regular friendship conversation a couple of weeks ago. We have been talking a little bit about this, you know, very down-to-earth topic, which reality is real.
Yeah, that's true. And Marta, before we will continue with this, what is the number of this episode?
I think it is number 13.
Interesting. How does it make you feel?
It doesn't make me feel in any particular way.
Really?
Number 13 is a good number.
Yeah, and it's actually quite interesting because some people would freak out. Maybe even podcasters in US would skip the number because I know that there are some hotels, I think, in US when they skip the 13th floor. So some of them would skip it and just name it 12 and then 14. Some people would embrace the 13 as a kind of a lucky, unlucky number. Some people would have absolutely no feelings about the number. And this is interesting because everyone would have a different reality, because then it would actually make you do a different type of action, you know? So, or you would think differently, prepare differently and so on. Just a random thought, just throwing it out there.
I think that's a very good fly in because as I was preparing for this episode, I have checked the definition of reality, you know, like how do we as humans actually describe the reality? And one definition, like a simple one that I have found, was can be described as the state of things as they are, not as they are imagined to be. That's like a, you know, one sentence kind of definition, because of course, like with everything, you can find multitude of definitions.
Yes, yes, I have seen that definition indeed, because it was in the outline of the show, which I have surprisingly looked into before recording, which doesn't happen that often, but it did happen. And of course, the definition is the very basic one. And I would even kind of like object to that definition, but that's a completely different story. But this is something we can anchor our discussion to, right? So yeah. Reality is, yeah?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it, like you can take reality in so many different ways, right? You can look at it as the way science or physics describe it, which I think is really cool. So the quantum mechanics describe it as everything is uncertain until it is observed. And that observation inevitably alters reality.
Yeah,
I actually like this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it actually is feeding into that experiment they made. I don't know how many years ago, but I think everyone heard of it, that they were trying to measure how the particles will move in a stream. And I'm probably completely butchering the description of this experiment, but they could see that the particles were moving in a certain way once they were observed. So that would mean that if something comes to your awareness, meaning you observe it, then it maybe becomes real. And I know that I know this story. Who told me that? Probably Dave. About some tribe that for the very first time was encountering, I wanted to say invaders, but the people who discover new lands, let's call it that way. And I think that the premise was that they were on a beach, and it's a documented actually case, and the ship was approaching. They have never seen a ship. They didn't have a concept of what a ship is. They were using the drafts only, and they didn't see it. The only people who could see it were the shamans, who actually noticed a ship on the horizon, because they had no idea or concept, or their imagination didn't even have that concept of a ship. They saw nothing. And that is absolutely mind-blowing to me, because they could even observe it, but because it was not even in their imaginary world, there was no concept of the ship did not exist to their eyes. And then the shamans saw it because they had maybe some, you know, a secret passages to whatever. But that was very interesting to me.
What so do you our think about consciousness, that? So our consciousness has a huge opening here, right? So the more conscious you are, the more access you have to the outside of what can be observed with the mm-hmm. eye. The mm-hmm. more you can observe, I don't know. I don't even know how to formulate my thought around it. However, bringing it a little bit more down to the reality perceptions as we know them in our hemisphere, I think one of the good fly-ins is many conversations that have been had around witnesses. So, for example, there is a crime. Mm-hmm. And then there are mm-hmm. witnesses. There is a group of people standing and seeing the same event happening. And then police is taking notes from the witnesses who describe that event differently. I think that this is one mm-hmm. of the easiest to relate to circumstances for our Western reality
mm-hmm. and for the Western flying culture, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I totally agree, and we can see a kind of a like we can see the same phenomena in our lives. For example, just imagine you and me walking to the shop, and we see a person, and you tell me, "Oh my God, he's really angry," and I'm like, "What? No, he looks tired." Like we can completely identify in our heads how something looks like, and that actually in turn makes us feel in a way, right? So for example, if you think that the person is angry, then your whole body starts to react in a stress response. If I think he's sad, maybe I want to give him a hug. But even seeing the same thing doesn't mean that we will observe the same thing, and that we, our bodies, our thoughts and emotions will react in the same thing. That's why this reality topic is absolutely fascinating for me. Good pick for the podcast.
Yeah, I think this is great, and it could go in many different ways. So I think, you know, since this is a podcast between the two of us, of course, we will bring it down to narrow it down in one direction. However, just to summarize this, what we have talked about so far. So what we can say is our observation of reality is impacted by some factors, right? And this mm-hmm. could be our memories, this could be our motivation, attitudes, cultural values, our beliefs, our physical and mental state.
Absolutely.
All of that can change our perception of reality. And even within the same person, with the same memories, filters, attitudes, and so on one day we can perceive exactly the same reality or exactly the same set of circumstances differently, just because of the way we feel in a given moment, our
Absolutely.
Given state right now.
So sorry for that.
That's
that was
fine.
My reality of my a bit of a throat that is still recovering from the cold. So that's the reality here. Absolutely. And I think that this is extremely important to remember, because that can also explain a lot of misunderstanding between people. But I have a question for you. I'm not sure if it was in the show notes, because I took a quick look, not a very prolonged one. Do you think that there is something like an objective reality? Do you think objective reality exists?
Not really. Okay. I think that based on the research I have made, and based on those examples where even people standing together looking at something and having a different perception of it, I know there are some social agreements, right? So there are social agreements as to what reality is. And there are some things that it seems to be that many people agree to be able to see the same thing. So, for example, if there is 100 people living in a village and 100 people can see the trees and the houses that are in that village, it describes the common reality, right? This is something that everyone agrees to be able to be seeing. But there will always be the odd ones out, the ones that will be able to see more or see through. Mm-hmm. Or the example that you have given from the indigenous tribes, where some people were not even able to perceive reality, as their minds did not have a concept of something, and the shamans could perceive. So it could be people who claim that they can see ghosts, right? You can have people sitting in the same room, and 90% of people will not be able to perceive anything. And there is this one odd one out, or a couple of people that can feel there is a presence or energy or ghost or whatever. So I think, you know, it's difficult to, as soon as there is someone who does not agree to the reality, there may be something more to what we are perceiving. So the reality is expanding, right?
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about your example about the 100 people in the village. And because we are in the mid of October and soon crossing to Halloween / Day of the Dead / some way, I was just thinking about a scene, like there is a village meeting and it's like, yeah, there is 100 of us here. And then there is this small little kid. No, actually, there is 102, because there are those two people who stand there. And it's like, everyone is like, there is nothing there. But it's actually that is a very, very good point. However, I just noticed while I was thinking about this that the majority would overrule the small little child that sees two extra people, saying to him, that's not true, we don't see it. So then I'm thinking, is it that reality is actually some sort of like a majority vote, you know?
Yeah, collective consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. It's the collective consciousness that defines the reality. And it could be a very philosophical conversation to try to go into. It could be philosophical, could be existential. However, I propose, knowing that there is nothing certain and very difficult to arrive at objective reality, let's bring it down to our own lives. So what does it mean to us in our own lives? If we know that it kind of depends on what we agree on collectively, it depends on our state of consciousness, both today, our state of mind, mood, memories, and so on, as well as our current capacity, the expansion of our consciousness, right? So if we are stepping into some shamanic abilities or just extraordinary abilities, which some people do have, and there is more and more scientific examples and research and evidence that there are people who can perceive more. And that the studies in telepathy and other outside of the 3D consciousness, they are being more and more measured. So it's easier and easier to talk about it. However, let's bring it down to our own lives. So have you, Anna, ever had an experience when you really believed something was real And then you have changed your mind. You had this like, I am 100% that this is true. This is real. And then you have changed your mind and have perceived it completely differently.
From the top of my head, I cannot identify that. I can identify a lot of things like what the hell is going on. But I'm not sure if that's exactly what you are asking about. So I have a story, which is my flagship story about a weird reality, that you are actually a part of that story. When we, several years ago, had a kind of a weekend in a summer house with one of our colleagues, and she had to abruptly leave the place in the middle of the whole weekend because she got a phone call that there is a flood in her apartment. And I remember, you know, how nervous she was and, you know, the whole situation and so on. And then a couple of weeks later, I have accidentally talked with someone who lived in that building. And that person said that there was never a flood there. And I started to question, was I in two different realities, you know, like, what the hell has happened here? And you know that story because you were there, you were involved, and that made me wonder. I could not really figure out what has happened because, and then when people were asking me about some parallel dimensions, I was like, yeah, I have an example, you know. I was in one dimension when there was a flood in the apartment, and then I moved suddenly to another dimension when there was no flood. So that was one of the things that I remember about this kind of almost like a split reality. But I'm not sure if you were looking for that kind of an example.
I think that's a very good example because there could be, I remember that. The girl indeed was really nervous, and then she came back and described to you all the things that happened and all the things she had to take care of. And then there is someone else living in the same apartment saying there was never a flood. And then
building.
In the same building. Great point, because that brings us to the reality. Could have there been a flooding in this one apartment? That did not affect any other, you know, apartment in the building. But that's a very good example where you believe there is a reality where a flooding happened. Then someone you trust tells you there was no flooding. And suddenly you start to believe that person that, okay, so the other person lied because... right? You start
and
to question.
And that's the thing that I couldn't actually kind of believe that the other person lied. That's why I also give it as this weird split reality thing, because I believed both of them. What do you do then? That was the interesting part. So that was, but you know, it happens to me, and I don't know if this is aging or what, but I have noticed for couple of years that people bring out things and situations from the past that I have no recollection of. Zero, null, nada. It's not like, I remember. Yeah, 8 years ago we did. Yeah, it's blurry, but I have no, there are things I'm like zero, null, nada. It does not exist in my head, in my reality. I don't know what you are talking about. So, of course, there is an option that something is wrong with my brain, or my brain is very, very effective at deleting certain things, like completely. But there is nothing, because I also have situations when someone recalls something that we did, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And I'm like, what was it? And then when I get more details, I start to remember that thing. But more and more, I start to have the situations where I have zero idea what the hell is going on. Was I there? Was this me? Because I don't remember any of this. So that is something that also makes me think if I should go to the doctor. But that's an interesting part.
Yeah,
here.
it is really, because of course the brain holds so much information and it stores a lot of information in the background, right? Because we cannot remember everything all at once, or many of us cannot. We are processing so much information all the time in the present moment. So of course, when it relates to the past, it makes sense that the brain can store some information in the background, which is not necessarily immediately accessible for us. And however, if someone adds more detail, we can retrieve that information from the database, so to speak, right? So that's interesting. However, if someone claims, and we cannot recall absolutely any of it, like zero, nada, you can then really, really question, has there been a split in reality? Have we, you know, have we participated or missed out on some reality? That's a very, very good question. So another question for me, have you had that kind of experience in your life where your reality was very different from those around you? So you could really, can you recall anything like that? I'm not sure if you can, maybe something will come to your mind, maybe not, where the experience of people around you was very, very different than yours. So you could really see, I don't know, a ghost, you know, or you could really perceive a reality differently than those around you. And you were like, oh my God, am I crazy or are they crazy? You know, kind of like a situation.
So when I think about all kind of more paranormal side of things, I do not recall anything of that because it usually happens to me where I'm alone. How convenient. So, you know, but okay, that's what it is. But I can tell you about something, kind of an everyday thing that is not triggering, because I did had situations when I was waking up in this world for the past 5 years, looking around and thinking how people cannot see what I see. Right? So that's a little bit of a different story. But for example, my my partner, boyfriend, husband, Dave, he basically sees all kind of birds all the time. All the time. We go to the terrace. Oh, look, this is this bird. We go to the balcony. This bird. We go for a walk. This bird. I see shit. Like literally, I see shit. He points with a finger, shows me the branch, and I don't see that bird. He also sees some animals that I don't see. And he is like, Anna, it's there. It's in front of you. Just look. He even brings me sometimes this kind of, you know, magnifying glasses. How do you call it?
Binoculars?
Binoculars. And I'm like, where? Where? What are you talking about? And I feel, and I know that actually between the both of us, I am the one with the good side. He wears glasses. And there was even once a situation when I thought he's, you know, fucking with me. But we brought my oldest daughter to the balcony and she saw that bird. And I was still like, guys, I don't know what you are talking about. I don't know. This is one big conspiracy. I see no birds. I don't know what the hell is going on here. So yes, that is kind of my daily experience with apparently some kind of a weird bird / animal whisperer. But I started to wonder, because I know that he's extremely interested in birds and in animals. He's very tuned in. He spent a lot of his childhood, well, he spent his entire childhood in Chile, but they had this kind of a thing in their family when they were going for 3 days long fishing trips. They were in a really in the middle of a nature. So he was observing those things from the moment he was a kid. He was a little boy, and he is very knowledgeable about different species of birds and animals. For me, yeah, I guess it's a pigeon. You know, I still mix pelican with flamingo. So as a city kid, I don't have that experience. And then I started to think maybe it's one of those, you know, ships at the horizon. I don't even have a concept of different birds, so I just don't see them. And he's like the shaman, although he's not, because he simply has more awareness. So that is kind of my, I wouldn't say a daily experience, but that happens at least 2 times a month, that we basically look at our garden or at the forest and he sees birds I simply cannot see. Even if he will, you know, take my head, put exactly the finger, still, I don't know what you see because I don't.
Thank you for that example. Yeah, thank you for that example, because I think it also brings together the example from the indigenous tribe, which I think was a very good example. However, how can we know that this was true, right? That kind of example. And you giving this example now kind of brings things together and is like a translation in our modern reality. So fantastic example. Thank you for that. And very, very like clear. Because I agree with you, in the last 5 years, what has been happening in the world, we have often had that kind of conversation. How can we perceive what's happening in the world so differently? And how can we, there have been like collective stories. However, even collective stories have been different in different countries. So what is really a collective story? So we can see that the whole cultural base can impact a lot our perception and interpretation of what is happening in the world. And sometimes even being close friends, us coming from a similar cultural background from Poland, then living in Denmark as an, you know, as an expat. So having like very similar backgrounds and still being able to perceive what's happening in the world very differently to each other, looking at the same evidence, at the same stories, at the same situations, and having very different interpretations of them. And I think one interesting thing to add here to all our, you know, cultural and memories and filters and attitudes and moods and consciousness levels and all that, I think there is also a very interesting thing that you have always pointed to me as a very important thing to be aware of, which is confirmation bias. I think that's a really, really important fact. Whenever we are trying to define what is real or what is our truth, being aware that there is something that is called confirmation bias. It's our tendency to interpret new evidence as confirmation of one's existing beliefs or theories. So this is something that happens to absolutely every single human being, no matter how open, no matter how scientific, no matter how much of a truth seeker we might be, we all have confirmation bias. And that's why it's great to do something when we are talking about research or science. That's why it's so great to do it with other people, with very diverse backgrounds, who have different cultural, emotional, experiential backgrounds than ourselves, because it is easier to make sure that we fall out of that confirmation bias due to our diverse backgrounds. Tell me, Anna, a little bit about that. How do you feel about it, the confirmation bias?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, you know, in defense of confirmation bias, because I think I read about it back in a day. This is basically, you know, not to trouble us too much. Our brain is like, okay, yeah, let's just, okay, you see this, yes, it fits your identity. Okay, it fits your mindset. It basically does not challenge us all the time, because otherwise we would be constantly challenged if we would have to, take the information, see, does it fit to our views? Does it not? What does it mean for me? Should I change? So it's, of course, it makes our kind of life a little bit more smooth and efficient. Otherwise, we would be just endless philosophers, I would assume, which is, by the way, not a bad job. If it's paid, I am taking job offers, by the way, because I love those things. But yeah, it just makes it easy. And the thing is that it many times it runs so much on autopilot that you have to make an effort to stop and actually kind of look at something and think, okay, I think this could be something else. So there is a function or purpose why this works like this. But you know, with everything that is easy, it can cause a lot of problems in the longer run. So with the confirmation bias, I have noticed that regardless on what side, especially now with the political spectrum, And I'm trying to be completely detached from it because I lost any interest in politics. Like, whatever comes out, it's just like the same fact, the same information is being taken by people from two different, you know, political spectrum and used as a confirmation of their views, or like, that's why we are better, or that's why our candidate is better. It's the same thing, but, you know, they will just make a different interpretation of the same. And I won't say fact, just an information. So you can actually build up and build up and build up the entire worldview, an entire identity, just because you are on this auto-confirmation bias mode. It is difficult, and I understand also the protection function of the confirmation bias, because imagine that you are standing in front of, you know, your entire world falling apart, and you build it so well and you confirmed it so many times that this actually is the reality, and suddenly all of this is taken away from you because you decided to, okay, I will actually look at it, and then, okay, where am I, who am I, how does this world work? And, you know, those are those moments when people go through those eye-opening experiences. It can be something from even a near-death experience, right? So it is very traumatic and stressful experience to have your whole world shattered. You know, your reality is not what you thought. And you have to, first of all, you will be faced with a question, so what is the reality? And you will have to rebuild yourself in the reality that you are not sure of at all. So yes, it's convenient and comfortable and automatic, but it is unfortunately feeding into something that could become, I would say, even quite damaging, or not only for yourself, but for others, because you shut down basically from any other worldview or opinion. Yeah. So those were my 5 cents, 50 cents, $1.
Thank you. Whatever. I think it was many more dollars in terms of value. I would have given you at least $157 for that input. Thank you.
Where is the collection point? One, yeah, I wonder.
And why in dollars, right? Why not in Danish kronas? It's more useful here in Denmark.
Because $157, it's more than 157 kronas.
Yeah, way more. So maybe it's a good currency exchange. Yeah. However, no, coming back to a more real response. No, that one was real as well.
Although I'm not sure it does not fit your reality.
Well, I'm not sure if the money will transfer to your account. That's what I'm not sure about. However, yeah. No, thank you for that. I think it's really important, and apart from challenging ourselves to come out of our confirmation bias as a consciousness exercise and as opening yourself up exercise, that's one thing. But it was really valuable to bring the two aspects. One of them, that it is also useful sometimes to have the confirmation, or might be useful to have a confirmation bias, just not to be all the time challenged. Although some people, they say, you know, as soon as you're on autopilot, then you're off in terms of consciousness. So that is questionable. Second thing is that it can be quite traumatizing when you are starting to see outside of collective agreement. And that collective agreement can be your family. So if there is a family view that you are stepping out of, if there is a country view, you know, agreement in whatever your peer group, inside your workplace, that can be quite difficult. And the more outside you are, the higher the cost can be. It can be a cost of exclusion. And many people were excluded from their families. we can bring an example of a family that agrees that everyone should take a vaccination during the corona times. And then you are that one person that does not want to take a vaccination. You see the world differently. Your reality mm-hmm. is different than that. And people have been excluded out of their families for making such a decision, for seeing things differently. So we could just...
Absolutely. And just to balance it out, I also know the stories of people who decided not to vaccinate and were excluding their vaccinated family members or colleagues because they were afraid of some sort of effect on them and so on. So it can go both ways. But yeah, absolutely, this split of realities can have that severe circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah, very big separation, right, can happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was one example. However, when you start having many points where you step out of those kind of collective agreements, whatever the collective is, however small the collective, family, society, mm-hmm. you know, it can be smaller or bigger. I am coming back to this question, like in our own lives, in our own little lives, how can we look at that? So what actually creates our reality and how is it created? What are your current views on that? Your own little world, you know, your own reality right now. What creates it?
Is that a question for me? Or yes, was it a rhetoric?
No, it is for you. Like, how do you feel about it now? And again, as we often mention, when we are having these sort of conversations, we are talking about how we feel about it now. We can already have a different perception of it in a week, in a month or something, when it's weaving web of consciousness. Consciousness is expanding all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like a picture of this little, it's audio picture. To make it
audio picture. Yeah, I don't know. That question took me a little bit by a surprise, I have to say. So I have to think about it. Do you have an answer to this question?
Well, I would like to share something around it, so you can have the time to think about it a little bit.
I do feel inspired.
Yeah, or feel inspired. I do believe that I have a huge impact on how my reality looks. I do believe mm-hmm. that I am main creator of my reality. And I do believe that it is both on a very human level, on a very 3D human level, I do have huge impact on my reality. I have, and the more responsibility I take for creating my reality, the more I can see it. So definitely, I do believe I have a huge impact on my own reality. And I believe I create it on many different levels. So I mentioned on a very 3D level, a very, very human, tangible experience, as well as looking outside of that, it can be perceived as a soul level. So some things that I could have created on a higher, different, alternative consciousness level, which I might not have a recollection of right now in my human experience. However, how do I create it? So I believe I have a huge impact on my reality. And how do I create it? It is through my thoughts, my feelings, my actions, my readiness. And recently, I'm also digging into that part of I create it also through my identity. And I would mm-hmm. love to have a more nuanced conversation about it. I'm not sure if we have enough time for it right now. So there is a lot of conversation around, you know, our thoughts create our reality. Mm-hmm. However, when you start digging into it, when you start working with your thoughts, when you start working with affirmations, you start seeing that it's not entire truth. It's not the entire truth. You can sit every day and think specific things and repeat specific thoughts, repeat even in words specific affirmations. And sometimes they become a reality and sometimes they do not become a reality. So mm-hmm. that kind of, we've had these conversations many times, Anna. Okay, so, you know, do my thoughts create my reality? okay, there is some energetic or emotional background into it. So even if I say it, but my energy oozes something different out of me, you know, these thoughts and words might have much less power than the energetical blueprint, the energy and the emotion that I am sending out of myself. Okay, so where does this come from? Some people say that thoughts create emotions. Emotions are energy in motion. But I think there are also different other sources of energies, not only thoughts. Thoughts definitely do that. But I think there is something more than that. So I look into that more than that. So there is this identity that we have. And there is the programming that we have took on in our early days, that programming that we fall back onto when we are under stress or on default or on autopilot. So there is this kind of identity which is more in our unconscious or subconscious, that is like a blueprint that is all the time sending that energy and information to the universe outside of our awareness. So there are thoughts that we are aware of. There are, feelings, emotions, actions that we are aware of, but there is a lot that is coming out of us without our consciousness, from our unconscious or subconscious. And this is super fascinating to me. That's why I am mentioning, and might be too long of a speech, so I will try to wrap it up very, very soon. So this is fascinating to me, and I am really, really exploring that topic. And to which level can I tap into the unconscious and subconscious to be more and more and more aware of it, so that there is less and less created unconsciously and more created consciously? So that is kind of like my area of exploration right now. And so I do believe that there is a lot of creation of my reality happens through me. And I can take full responsibility and ownership of it. However, there is also an aspect of reality being created by a collective. So if I am in an area where there is war, I can be a very peaceful person. However, the war is still happening, you know, around me. So there is that level of creation, of collective creation, collective collaboration. And I think it's very important to look into those two aspects. And yes, there can be masters that can have so much peace that they can walk through the field of war and no bullet will hit them. A kind of like, you know, master level consciousness expansion. And this is fascinating. There are some, tales and stories of that kind of situations. And at the same time, looking at it as I am an individual, and there is collective, and that we are connected with each other. So what happens to me happens to others as well. So kind of like seeing, seeing the connection across all things, all people, and what we create together, more and less consciously. That's also a super fascinating area of exploration. And I will wrap it up in this way for now, because I have talked too long, I feel, and I would like to, apart from making noises, also hear from you, Anna. What have these inspired in you?
So first and foremost, what was that sound? What fell on the floor? Because that thing wanted you to talk more. When you said, I need to wrap it up, and then there was like a immediate feedback. No, talk more. What was it?
Water in a bottle.
Water in a... Wow, one of the ancient elementals. Water. Water spoke to you. All right. A lot of things that you touched upon. A lot of very interesting things, which only suggests me that we might do a part two of this episode. But let's start from the end. You mentioned something about the reality of collective consciousness versus the individual reality. And maybe this is something that we did not manage to address until this point, because that is indeed a correct. So, for example, I guess everyone can agree, at least in this area where we are right now, that it's autumn and today it's windy, because they can come out and feel the wind. I can see it. Well, of course, depending when you are, if we would gather people around one place, right? So everyone can agree on that. Everyone can agree that there is a place that there is war. We have quite a number of them right now. So there are things that we could collectively agree, and it would be extremely difficult to challenge them unless we will, yeah, go into some kind of a Neo from Matrix mode and suddenly see everything in pixels, and suddenly this is not the reality, this is just the program. Whatever you can use for that. But there are things that we can all definitely agree on. They might be imaginary, though. That doesn't make them real. That's why I was also challenging the definition you mentioned. I know that you don't necessarily agree with it. You just took something to, again, start our discussion with. But I also believe that the reality can be the imaginary things, because, for example, how many of us have ever been to, I don't know, Egypt? Not many of us. Like, from all the people I know, but we all believe that Egypt exists. So in a way, it's our imagination, what we read about. We did not went there, we did not experience the country, but we believe that Egypt exists. And that's an imaginary for vast majority of people in the world that is based on their kind of thought imagination, not the actual real experience. So that's another topic that I'm parking for the next episode. Is reality solely something that, you know, it's kind of grounded in 3D, or is it also imaginary? But about that thing with the collective things, collective realities, I would actually call them more of a collective experiences. Even during the wartime, and you don't have to necessarily be the master that dodges bullets again, like Neo. But I remember this movie, and probably you have seen it. I don't know the title now. It was an Italian movie about, it's a very sad and touching movie, but also in a way weirdly funny. It was about a father who was sent to the concentration camp with his little son, and he managed to pretend for I don't know how many months or years that this is kind of a game. I will try to find the title of this movie. I think it got an Oscar. I saw this movie once. It was extremely touching because this father made himself an absolute 100% purpose of not traumatize his kids. So he was like, this is a game, you know, you have to hide here. The kid was like, to the point where in the movie it looked like the kid was not aware that he's in a concentration camp. He thought it's just like some sort of a very long game. And you have to realize that this happened in a concentration camp, which, when you would probably assume 100% of people had the most horrible traumatic experience, and there it is, right? There is a different experience because someone chose differently and created a different reality for a child. I will check the title. Maybe, Marta, if you have your fingers ready, you can actually check it. What could be the title of this movie? But that is applicable to everywhere. You have countries under war, and then you will find people who gather together to help each other, and then you will find equally a group of people that are going to loot the houses that were abandoned, right? And they are creating reality hubs. They are creating different experiences within the collective reality. So war can be horrible and is horrible, but the war can also have, you can also survive it with a level of a dignity and maybe even love and light if you look at things, if the reality is different. I don't know if that makes sense. So I will just stop now and I will ask you if you found the title of the movie. Hello? Are you there or are you sleeping? Hello? Marta?
From this point and on, it all went completely weird. It's almost as if Marta and Anna split into two different realities, though that split was more thanks to technology issues rather than anything else. Still, we couldn't present it to you today. So, if you want to know more about which reality is real, you'll have to wait for part two of this episode, where we will dig in much more into who creates our reality and how can we create our own reality. Is there something we can do with our thoughts, our words, with the stories, and much, much more about which reality is real. And of course, we will find out which movie Anna had in mind. I hope to hear you soon. Thank you. Bye.